Hi, this is Brendan Gleeson from the Fighting Irish, and you're listening to D-Fly and Dixie podcasts on Inside Lacrosse.
Coming to you from the IL Podcast Studio in the Baltimore, Maryland worldwide headquarters of Inside Lacrosse, it's the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast, featuring Inside Lacrosse, ESPN, and Big Ten Network analyst, and my Blue Jay brother, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dix, let's get it.
The sound effects of the D-Fly Dixie Podcast. I got my latest edition of the Inside Lacrosse magazine with, on my cover is Kenzie Kent. Aren't there two covers this month?
Yeah, there's always a Canadian cover.
Oh, okay.
And there is a U.S. cover.
Is that for every issue of Inside Lacrosse?
Every issue of Inside Lacrosse.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, there's we have to design two different covers because there's a postage code or a barcode that is different, a price that's different in Canada and the U.S. So we have to design two different covers. And oftentimes the photo or the design of the front is a little bit different.
Oh, interesting.
So there were two covers. One had Kenzie Kent from Boston College.
Right.
One had Erica Evans.
From Maryland.
From Maryland.
Yeah. So I was looking through the Inside Lacrosse magazine, and it had the spring podcast schedule. And everybody else uses their real names except the D-Fly Dixie podcast on Friday. So we don't even use, they don't even use our real names in the publication.
I never even thought of it like that.
It's fine. It doesn't matter. I think everybody knows.
People know who we are.
About the podcast and getting a lot of positive feedback.
We have real nicknames, though, that have been our
nicknames
for a long time.
I've been Dix or Dixie since high school.
Yeah, and people have been calling me Flinny or D-Fly since at least college. Like, Flinny all my life, but D-Fly in college.
Okay.
So it's a long-time nickname, and we're old, so.
That is true.
You know.
My 25th reunion this April at Johns Hopkins University. I'll be celebrating by calling a doubleheader down in College Park. Maryland, Michigan men and women for the Big Ten Network.
Maybe you'll get over to Homewood for
I don't know. A lot of guys
crab cake or something.
A lot of guys are coming back for the March 23rd. Actually, it's actually Alumni Day, March 23rd at Hopkins. The women, forgive me, I don't know who the women play. The women play at like noon or 1, and then the men play Virginia at 6 o'clock. So I know a lot of Blue Jays are coming back for that March 23rd game against Virginia. And I know April 6th, which is the actual day of homecoming, Hopkins plays Rutgers. But I don't know if a lot of guys are coming back for that one or not. When you get into the April, you know, when you have kids, youth lacrosse starts up, whatever, baseball, you know, whatever the kids are playing, and it's tough to come back and the quote-unquote real spring.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. Which is always what's fun about springtime.
Yeah.
You know, lots of cool stuff.
How about the, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but how about the announcement this week from the Big Ten Network that it'll be, I forget what they're calling it. I think they might be calling it Maryland Day for April 27th. So how about this lineup? I think it's noonish. It is the Maryland spring football game. 4:30 Hopkins, Maryland women. 7:30 Hopkins, Maryland men. Lacrosse. So Maryland Day, April 27th.
I like how lacrosse games get the top billing over the Terps football team.
But I think it's great. We've seen that the last couple of years at Michigan and Ohio State. They'll do the spring football game around – actually, I'm sorry. They'll do the lacrosse games at like 11 a.m., and then they'll start getting a build-up crowd coming for the spring football game. And so I tip my cap to Maryland for doing that. But, yeah, you're right. The main event are the men's and women's lacrosse games because they're after the spring football game. But a lot of excitement in College Park around football with Mike Locksley now, the head coach. He's secured a couple high-profile transfers,
if I'm
not mistaken.
And has a pretty good recruiting class.
Okay.
For a short order, at least. You know, he didn't have a lot of time to pull that together, and he apparently got some good players coming in.
Neat.
So hopefully. I would like Maryland. Again, I'm pretty outspoken about my disdain for College Park and Maryland, but I want them to be good.
Yeah.
And it would be fun if they were good in football or better in football, much more competitive in the Big Ten.
Right.
Like, why not? Why wouldn't we want that?
Came close last year to beating Ohio State. I mean, they should have converted that two-point. Was it a two-point conversion, I think, or late?
I mean, again, I don't really follow them.
Yeah, because you are.
I'm following the Blue Jays football team.
I do as well.
Throughout the playoffs.
I do as well.
Final Four caliber.
No doubt.
Division
no doubt.
Three football.
But I'm going to rag on you again because you are the cliche of a sports fan. Your favorite football team, college football team, is Notre Dame. Your favorite
my
college grandpa,
My grandfather went to Notre Dame, though.
Okay.
And he played football like way back in. Like,
okay.
I have some lineage.
Let's say I give you that one. I will give you that one. Favorite college basketball team, Duke.
Yeah.
What's the connection there?
There
none.
I could go on and on about the connection there.
But that was after the fact. Your connections are after the fact.
But I always liked them for several reasons that I don't want to get into.
Understood.
But
and
yes,
your favorite college lacrosse team is Johns Hopkins.
To go to school. 2 degrees
okay,
from Hopkins.
I'll give you that
And
one.
I worked there for a long time.
I'll give you that one.
So,
but, you know, you crack me up.
I know.
You crack me up with your fandom.
I like the Ravens and the Orioles and the Philly teams.
Homegrown.
Like, kids. So it's not
homegrown.
Like I'm a Yankees and a...
That's true.
Cowboys fan or
you're
anything
not like you're
that.
A Yankee, Cowboy, or Red Sox,
heck no,
Steelers fan, I guess. Yeah, I mean, my favorite teams. I don't really have favorite teams. I follow Maryland sports. I've been following
minutes,
this Maryland basketball team. They are
minutes from campus.
They are maddening to go into what would they when they went into Iowa, and they beat Iowa for their first ever win over a ranked opponent on the road. Since Mark Turgeon took over, right?
Get out of here. I think that can't be right.
I think that's correct. It was like 27, 28 straight games. And then they go up to Penn State and they lose to Penn State. But Penn State's taken down some good teams.
I know. I've heard that Penn State's coach is, I think his name is Pat Chambers, is on the hot seat for the basketball hot seat. And he has been. It's a tough, traditionally been a tough program to be successful. I don't know why it's so hard there.
It's a football school.
Sure. But, you know, you're in Pennsylvania and you're the flagship university and there's the Philly schools are really good.
Right.
And Pitt basketball has a great tradition. I don't understand why Penn State can't be better.
I'm not so sure.
I mean, Villanova's won two of the last three national championships.
Right. But Villanova is a basketball school.
100%.
You know. But
good 1AA football team, though.
I do know that Penn State beat Michigan at home. They've beaten Maryland at home now. They beat somebody else of consequence.
Do you feel
home.
Like there's a buzz about Maryland basketball?
No.
Yeah.
Absolutely not.
And I guess maybe it coincides with when Gary Williams retired and they left the ACC. It just, again, Dix and I live in Columbia, Maryland.
I live in Ellicott City.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Thank you.
I live in, we live about 20 minutes.
South. No, north.
North
of College
Park. Really close. And if we lived 20 minutes away from another major university in a Power 5 conference, like you couldn't on game days, you wouldn't. That's all people would be talking about. Or you'd go into the grocery stores and they would have people wearing their red and white. Or like, I just think if you were within 20 minutes of Columbus, Ohio, or
Ohio State, yes. I don't know about Michigan.
Well,
I don't know about Michigan basketball. I would say North Carolina, yes. Duke, probably,
but
yes.
But I feel like it used to be. Like, people used to
really?
Talk. Yeah, I feel like there used to be a
I've never buzz been in, about I've never been in that
the
world.
The Terps, that it just doesn't seem like it exists.
I think that Maryland basketball over the years, the Carolina matchups, NC State, Duke, those were the compelling.
Yeah, it's hard to get excited about, hey, Nebraska's coming into
because
Comcast
it's not familiar.
Center.
I think the move to the Big Ten was the right move for a lot of reasons for the University of Maryland. I go to one game a year, typically. I went to their game this year against Wisconsin at home. A friend of mine is a season ticket holder. It took me and another friend.
It's a good game to go see.
That was a good. They were up big, and they almost choked it away. But even there was an interesting article, but they were saying basketball at Rutgers, which has not been that good. There's a lot of excitement at Rutgers. Like at games, students are riled up and they fill this whatever arena that is up in Piscataway, and they don't have that same buzz in College Park. I thought the crowd this past weekend when they played Michigan looked really, really excited.
Yeah, always looks good on TV.
Not all the time.
Really?
You can see a lot of empty
Again,
seats on TV.
not watching all the games like I used to. I mean, I guess maybe because they were in the same league as my favorite team, and I was just much more.
I feel like I watch Maryland now more that they're in the Big Ten than I did when they were in the ACC. Maybe that's inaccurate.
Well, you're a Big Ten guy now.
I am, and I do. It's a different brand of basketball, too. It's a little bit more physical.
But is that your default channel on TV? You just turn it on, and it's the Big Ten Network?
We watch plenty of, well, my son being a wrestler, and BTN does an awesome job of college wrestling. So BTN is on quite a bit in our household. But I will start, okay, I'm sitting down to watch television, and if there isn't something specifically on TV, I typically go 570, which is the ESPN channel, and then you just go up from there. Right. So I think I go like 570 through 596-ish, which is one sports, and it's an offshoot of some. I've seen on that one sports channel, I think it's one sports, I saw a flag football game being televised or tape delayed from Dunbar High School back in the fall. And it was one of the most interesting. I watched the thing for like a half hour because it's something you never see on television. And it was grown men playing flag
football.
Were
they celebrities?
No, it was like a Baltimore league. And it was obviously the league just bought the time on this channel to run their programming. And it was kind of cool. They had announcers. They had a sideline guy. Like, you know.
Just dudes.
Just guys being familiar with each
other. That's funny.
Yeah.
That's funny. All right. Well, I did not expect to be talking about Maryland Terrapin football program, their move to the Big Ten, and a lot of other things we just addressed.
I don't know enough about all the ins and outs. I just know that I do watch a lot of Maryland basketball, and it's different. The big men. There's a lot of, you know, the big men are kind of the, well, not necessarily the guards. There's a one guard from Purdue.
Carson Edwards.
He's good.
Cassius Winston.
He's Michigan State, right?
Yeah. And
then you have like guys like Michigan Ethan. Ethan Happ is like the Tyler Hansborough of what they, you know, the guy seems like he's been in Wisconsin for 10 years, and his teammates love him, but it seems like everybody else doesn't like him. Iowa had that really bony guy a couple years ago.
They poked everybody in the eye.
Yeah, he was a chump. He was a chump.
Oh, man. Well, this is a lacrosse podcast, so let's get to some lacrosse. Some midweek games of note. Number 15, Richmond, went down in overtime to the Mount St. Mary's. Shout out to my boys there. We have a lot of our fall and summer events that we run. We get Mount St. Mary's guys to help us out. Great group of guys. Great kids. And really always happy to see them doing well.
Tip of the cap to Tom Gravanti as well. And now you have a Richmond team off that huge win over
Notre Dame,
have lost two in a row, lost to Duke Friday night game recently, and then this loss to Mount St. Mary's.
Yeah. Princeton 19, Navy 11, Michael Sowers, 2 goals, 7 assists. What a day for him. And then Emmett Cordry and Philip Robertson have 5 goals each too.
That was a game that I was watching on the Patriot League Network. Tuned in late, 3-0 Princeton, and I'm just waiting for Navy to kind of settle in, and they never did. I mean, Princeton just dominated them from start to finish.
And then in a game that had a lot of storylines, but UMass 14, Albany 8. UMass goalie's having a great season. Sean Scannone, 16 saves. They got balance scoring 2+ points from 7 different guys.
Yeah,
Albany 1-3 now. And one of the big stories coming from this past weekend was Doka Nanacoke having to miss a game or was sat out by Albany for a possible small infraction. Matt Kinnear at Inside Lacrosse has a fairly comprehensive story about what happened, what transpired on InsideLacrosse.com. I suggest you go back and check it out if you have any questions about this. But he had some type of social media post that tagged a stringing company. And as a precaution, Albany kept him out of the game on Saturday against...
They lost at Cornell, 1-goal game.
And then holding him out, there was a question about how long it was going to be. Some people, Annie Schroff, Jay Billis, some other notable people in the media were questioning it. Again, talking NCAA, you know, penalizing some students for such small things when, you know, sometimes their own sponsors aren't obeying all the rules. And then the NCAA firing back saying, hey, this wasn't us. You know, here's the tweets from the NCAA. To clarify some details, Albany first reached out to the NCAA today about Tohoka Nanacoke after it withheld him from competition on Saturday. We are reviewing the facts submitted by the school to reach a resolution. And that was on March 4th at 4 o'clock. And then the next day, they come back and say, the Albany lacrosse coach made inaccurate statements. Here are the facts. The NCAA did not suspend Tohoka and Anna Koch. Albany proactively withheld him Saturday after finding a violation. The NCAA acted on Monday, the same day Albany reached out and said he did not need to sit out. So he was reinstated, if that's what you want to call it, and was back in action on Tuesday. And he had 3 goals and an assist to lead Albany against UMass.
It's a strange situation. I don't recall specifically, and maybe I could go back on my Twitter feed, but I thought the language was, I don't know if it came from Albany or other media outlets. I think LAC Sports Network was taken to task because they had posted some information. Somewhere along the line, somebody said that Tohoka Anticoke was indefinitely suspended by the NCAA. Did I read that incorrectly, or do I have that wrong?
That was what was out there in the
But I thought it was universe. In writing, on someone's Twitter post. Do I have that wrong?
I don't know if that's correct or not. But I don't know that you're wrong.
Either way, it's an odd situation.
There was a lack of clarity on what exactly was the issue.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's one of those things where it's just an odd situation. And I remember reading that tweet on, I think it was Monday, was the 4th, right?
Yeah.
From inside the NCAA where they were like, listen, we didn't suspend Tohoka Anticoke. So who knows? I think now people are asking the question, and I don't know if this is fair or not, is Albany better or worse without Tohoka Anticoke? Because when he's on the field, are they relying on him too much? In other words,
there's a lot of ball watching.
Are they, yeah, is it one guy doing a lot of things and 5 guys standing around, whereas they almost knocked off Cornell on Saturday without him?
Yeah.
So I think his absence has generated a lot of questions around, like you mentioned, the clarification. But I think from a bigger picture is Tohoka good for Albany this year, being such a talented player, but will the guys around him continue to play at a high level, or are they going to continue to defer to him?
Well, they have one of the games that's on our don't miss watch list for this week. They play No. 7 Maryland Saturday at 1 o'clock, and while Albany's kind of desperate for a win, I don't think Maryland's a team you're going to get healthy against.
I'm looking at an Instagram post from LAC Sports Network. It says 3 days ago, NCAA suspends U Albany's Tohoka Anticoke indefinitely for social media post. So that's where I saw that.
Right. So are they wrong, or did they get some bad information?
I don't know. And then another post, this says 3 days ago from LAC SportsNet, Tohoka Anticoke reinstated by NCAA and will play Tuesday versus UMass. But the NCAA saying
it wasn't us at all.
We weren't the school involved did it, in any way, shape, or form.
Well, the bottom line is he's back and he's eligible, but Albany may have a few other issues that they need to work out on and off the field. All right, Tix, let's get to some more of these previews. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right, Tix, our first featured game of the week, No. 4 Penn State versus No. 2 Cornell, Friday at 7 o'clock down in Charlotte at the Crown Lacrosse Classic. A lot of neutral site games this week.
There are.
A lot of them.
Yeah.
It's like the week to do these tournaments.
Yeah, you got this event in North Carolina. You've got Notre Dame and Denver facing off out in California at the Pacific Coast Shootout.
We'll look at that one soon.
What else is neutral site this
There's
week?
Something called the inaugural Philly 4 Lacrosse Classic. So, Philly basketball, we're talking a lot about basketball earlier. They have the Big 5. Well,
yeah.
Philly lacrosse scene, there's Villanova, Penn, Drexel, and St. Joe's.
Sounds right.
So they have a Philly 4 Classic.
Sounds a lot like the old Independence Classic.
A little bit.
Lacrosse used to
Yeah, and Friday night, Penn will play Villanova. So the first two Friday games are at Villanova, okay. And then the next set of games are at Drexel.
Oh, neat. Okay. That's cool.
Yeah, so it should be a cool little event. So a lot of these tournaments this weekend. I don't know why. It's like first weekend of March, full weekend of March is when they are. So speaking of this game, Cornell, I have a conversation coming up with Peter Milliman in a little bit. They are about to go off on one of the toughest little stretches that I can possibly think of ever seeing in the regular season. So they play No. 4 Penn State this Friday, tonight, on Sunday. Whether they win or lose, they'll play No. 1 Towson. And then they go on the road again for their first Ivy League game next Saturday at also number four, tied with Penn State. Yeah. So they play three top four teams in 9 days, all away from the friendly confines of Schoelkopf Field.
This weekend has the makings of a Final Four kind of championship weekend feel to it, with all the teams in the IL Media poll being ranked in the top four, with the exception of Jacksonville. And yeah, the Dolphins are a dangerous team that no one can take lightly. They play Towson on Friday night, and then they play Penn State on Sunday. Can't take them lightly, but you hit the nail right on the head. What a brutal stretch for the Big Red, having to face Nittany Lions, then off of, you know, a day's rest, then you take on Towson. The things that concern me, first of all, Penn State, Cornell, two terrific offenses. Both are shooting around 41-42%, averaging about 17 goals a game. The questions that I have in this game, when I was digging in doing research on it, is wow, Cornell is only facing off around 38%, and you got to face Gerard Arcari. And then goaltending, they're only getting about 45-46% save percentage. So this is a team that has had to win games like they won against Albany 17-16, outscoring them. Will that work against a team like Penn State? Remains to be seen. But Jeff Teat, terrific, obviously, and he's scoring a little bit more this year than he was at this time last year. Grant Amott on the other side for Penn State, an assist machine, great vision, quarterback of that offense. So you got two of the finest playmakers in college lacrosse facing off this weekend, their teams facing off this weekend.
One of the questions I had for Coach Milliman was, how do you prepare your team for the travel, the two games in a short amount of time, turning things around? And I was really interested in his answers. So let's hear that conversation right now with Coach Peter Milliman from Cornell.
We're joined by Cornell head coach Peter Milliman on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast on Inside Lacrosse. Coach Milliman, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Coach, your team is 3-0 and currently sits at number 2 in the Inside Lacrosse media poll. What have you seen from your team that you like through the first three games?
That's a good question. I think I like some of it. Actually, I like a lot of it so much. But,
right.
You know, we're three games in. We're trying to get practices in, you know, 15-degree weather with snow and ice. And so it's hard to really feel great about how good we are right now or what we're doing really well, because a lot of what we're doing is just trying to muscle through, you know, some tough conditions and some challenges. But a strong group of leaders. We've got a strong group of experienced players who, you know, have been through a few battles and just, you know, really, you know, keep themselves, you know, focused on going forward and being positive and supporting the teammates. And I think that's helped us so far this year.
Your offense has really been driving it for your team, averaging nearly 17 goals a game. What can you say about that group?
It's a pretty good experienced group that, you know, for the most part, everybody that's in our top 9, even 10 or 11, you know, played consistently last year, you know, graduated one guy that played on a regular basis last year. And so, you know, bringing back an experienced attack group and some midfield depth has helped us. And it's allowed, you know, Coach Busick really to continue to develop a game plan for, you know, what we're going to see. We tend to see some every week. And so sometimes you just have to be prepared for a few different things. And I think the, you know, the experience and the coordination there has helped us, you know, maybe handle a few different things.
Jeff Teat has been a dynamic presence for you on the field. What does having a player of that caliber mean to the Cornell program?
It's pretty unique. I mean, he's a very talented player, but, you know, I think more than anything, he's just he's a great young man. He's a hard worker. He's a fantastic teammate. And, you know, the guys really respect him, not just for his abilities, but, you know, for the way he goes about things. And, you know, he cares a lot about, you know, the success of this team. And I don't think the success of his own you know, reputation, so to speak, is ever going to come in front of that. He just, you know, gives what he has, and he, you know, gives as much as anybody else here, and guys really respect that.
Turning our attention to your upcoming games, you have maybe the toughest three-game stretch in history. So in your next 9 days, you'll play number 1 Towson, number 4 Penn State, in less than 48 hours down in Charlotte, then turn around and play your Ivy League opener, also on the road, at Yale, who's also tied for number 4 in the poll. So three games away from Ithaca in 9 days against top 4 ranked teams. Who scheduled this?
Oh, I did. That's good, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah,
tough.
It was an opportunity to play some good teams, you know, in maybe a different setting, a different venue. Yeah. But, you know, sometimes the scheduling thing kind of just works out for us. You know, there's only so much we can do with our location. Mm-hmm. To get great teams, you know, on weekends, there's only so many weekends we have with our schedule, and weekdays are tough because there's not a lot of games within an hour or two of campus. So, you know, sometimes playing two games in a weekend is the best way to make it work. It's not ideal, but, you know, it serves our needs, which is getting games against quality opponents where we don't miss class and we don't, you know, have games where we're going to miss, you know, more class than we're actually allowed to. You know, it's a pretty strict Ivy League rule. So we just have to, you know, adhere to those rules and do what we could to get the contest in. And then sometimes, you know, just the luck of the draw, you end up playing a tough stretch and, you know, the way it works, be ready for the challenge.
So this weekend, your Big Red will play two games in the Crown Classic in Charlotte, North Carolina on Friday night and Sunday afternoon. Sort of simulates the Ivy League tournament. And as mentioned, you'll be joined in the event by Penn State, Towson, and Jacksonville. So before we get into the matchups, I'm curious about how you and your staff approach and prepare for a weekend like this.
Sure. A little bit of experience, like you mentioned. We had an Ivy League tournament last year. We played two games over a weekend, Friday, Sunday. We also did it 2 weeks ago when we played Hobart and Lehigh. And then similarly, we'll do it again this weekend. You know, obviously hoping for a chance to play in the Ivy League tournament again and, you know, just kind of preparing for, you know, what type of scenarios mm-hmm. you see in a playoff. You know, the biggest focus point when it comes to these weekends, I think, is just preparing for the first team you're going to see more than more than anything else. You know, we set the tone at the beginning of the week. We don't talk about the second team. We don't mention it. We don't prepare. We don't share any of the scout information with our guys. We don't show them any film of them, because if this were a tournament weekend and you don't play your game on Friday properly, you don't get to play on Sunday.
Right.
So, you know, if we're in a playoff situation, in the conference playoffs or whatnot, then, you know, we're just trying to get through Friday. And if we get through Friday, then we turn our attention around. We have. And so we're going to set the same, you know, scenario up for our guys this weekend, you know, knowing that we do have a game on Sunday and we do know who the opponent is.
Right.
It's just a practice and focus and discipline to make sure that we're approaching the weekend the right way.
On Friday, you have the primetime game at 8 o'clock with number 4 Penn State. And the Nittany Lions have also looked great so far in 2019. What have you seen from them on film?
They're really, really well coached and a talented team. You know, they're impressive with the pace they play at. They got some really, really impressive athletes. I mean, they're one of the top teams for a reason. They do everything well, and, you know, they really don't give anything back to you. You got to make sure that you're not giving anything to them, because that makes it easy on a team that you know, we can't afford to give away easy plays to. So, you know, we're just going to have to make sure that we're, you know, being smart, being disciplined, being diligent, and really willing to compete for every opportunity on the field.
And then no matter what happens on Friday night, like you said, you have to come back and play the team that's ranked number 1 in the country, the Towson, who, like Penn State, also mm-hmm. wins faceoffs and has mm-hmm. experience and talent at all levels of the field. So how do you try to slow down the Tigers?
It's a good question. I mean, they're a strong team. I've known that coach and coaching staff for a while, and they've always been just really disciplined and diligent in the details. They, you know, they more than probably anybody right now don't give anything away. They make sure that they're strong where they need to be strong. They, you know, they protect their net. They, you know, fight for positioning and opportunities in the middle of the field as well as anybody. You know, it's going to be a short turnaround, but, you know, I'm not really overly concerned with the strategy of it, because it's not one of those situations where I think, you know, the game planning and the scheme on the coach's clipboard is going to make more of a difference than our guys being able to refill the tank emotionally
right.
and get themselves back on the game field to attack another team on Sunday afternoon for the first whistle. You know, if we're thinking about our sliding schemes or what type of offenses we want to run, I think we might end up slowing ourselves down before we even get to that first whistle. So, like I said, we're going to turn our focus at the end of Friday. Once that game is complete, we'll turn our focus to the next team we're playing. and do what we can to prepare for them on a short turnaround. But it's more about what we're doing for ourselves and within our group than it is about, you know, who we're playing and what they do.
Switching things up a little bit, like most fans, I've really enjoyed getting an inside look at the Cornell program through watching the season, the series by STX and Inside Lacrosse. What are some of the pros and cons of allowing that kind of access to your program for the public to see?
I mean, there could conceivably be a lot of cons because there's a distraction. There's, an inside look into things that may be a competitive advantage for opponents. There's, you know, maybe some insecurities coming from our guys who are on display or are out there for everybody to see and then talk about and be scrutinized and however you look at it. But, you know, the opportunities, in my opinion, outweighed it when we looked at it for a while, and it was not an easy decision. But I think that, you know, it's an opportunity this program deserves, and these guys have earned this right to be in contention and in consideration. And if they're going to be a top team and they're going to expect to compete for championships, then they're going to get attention. And I don't think that it's wrong that we practice that and get comfortable with it. And if the first camera they see is, you know, that they are competing for a national championship or something, then maybe that's, you know, going to be a challenge for them and maybe even a bigger one. So, you know, I know that's a long way off and not necessarily, an expectation at this point, but I think handling this scenario with focus and discipline and handling it well as a team is definitely an expectation and something that I think also is worth practicing.
And then finally, one last question. You mentioned sort of the prestige of your program. Through my job here at Inside Lacrosse, I've been fortunate to meet and talk and get to know Coach Moran over the last few years. And now, you know, you were the interim head coach last year. They made it official after last season. What's it like to hold the keys as the Richard Moran head coach at a program so steeped in tradition and history?
And it's a special opportunity. This is a really incredible place and an incredible program to be a part of. I think, being honored with his role, this position to lead this program is humbling, but it's also an honor. You know, and I want to make sure I'm doing my best job, and I want to make sure I'm respecting the opportunity. I appreciate it. I could not be in a better place and be more supportive and, feel like I have the opportunity to really compete at the top. But it's, it's one that comes with, some expectations and some scrutiny and the whole ball. I think it's just about, respecting the opportunity and really doing your best to make sure that these guys that are coming out of the locker room are getting a great experience and a great opportunity to be successful.
Coach Milliman, thanks for joining us, and best of luck this weekend and throughout the season. I really appreciate your time.
Sure thing. Appreciate you having me.
So as you could hear, Coach Milliman is very excited about the opportunity that his team has, and he thinks he'll find out a lot about his squad this weekend and next weekend.
You look at these teams playing in this event, Penn State, Big Ten, Cornell, Ivy, Towson, CAA, Jacksonville, SoCon, all have hopes of making their conference tournament and winning their conference tournaments, which with it come the automatic qualifier to the NCAAs. What do you have to do that? You have to win 2 games in 3 days. So they're going into that environment. And then all of these teams have aspirations of being in Philadelphia Memorial Day weekend. What do you have to do to win a national championship? Win 2 games in 3 days. So I think this is a good test for all four of these ball clubs. But Cornell in particular, they got a few votes for number one this week. I think they got 3 or 4 votes in the IL media poll. And some people believe that they are the best team in the country. Well, now they have the opportunity to prove it. There's only 3 undefeateds left in Division One, and 2 of them are here this weekend in Charlotte, in Towson and Cornell. Obviously, one of them is going to take an L this week, if not 2. And then you have Ohio State is the other undefeated team, and they're at Hofstra this weekend. So should be a great event down in Charlotte, North Carolina. I think it's actually specifically Matthews, North Carolina, is where they're playing the games.
Yeah, so if you're going to the games, make sure you look for Matthews, North Carolina. You don't get lost in downtown Charlotte.
Don't want that happening.
Okay. No, don't want that for sure. Hey, our next game is number 18, Johns Hopkins, winner of 2 straight games at the Dome to play number 14, Syracuse, Saturday at 1 o'clock in a renewal of one of lacrosse's great rivalries.
Second year in a row, this game will be played in the Carrier Dome. Normally, this is a home-and-home series, but it was interrupted a couple years ago. 2016, Hopkins played at home, and then the 17 game was originally scheduled for the Carrier Dome and moved to Homewood Field because of possible scheduling concerns with Syracuse women's basketball. I think that year they hosted an NCAA tournament game, something along those lines.
That sounds right.
So basically, 2 years in a row at Homewood Field. Last year, Hopkins played up in the Dome, and they'll play again in the Dome, and then the series will go back to the home-and-home format. But got to tip your cap to this Hopkins team. The criticism of the Blue Jays, especially in their opening season loss to Towson, was they didn't fight back. Like, they seemingly didn't have an answer when Towson jumped them and smacked them in the mouth. Both of these victories over North Carolina and Princeton were come from behind, where they trailed at some point late in the game, fourth quarter, and they got off the deck, and they found a way to win. Cole Williams is starting to find his groove. Joey Epstein, I think, has been terrific. And players like Brett Baskin, 3 goals last week against Princeton, are starting to get a little bit of midfield productivity. But if you want to talk about a team that, you know, to me, has made a tremendous transformation from week one to now, it is Syracuse. That home opener against Colgate was as flat and as bland as I've ever seen a Syracuse team play. They could have beaten Virginia last week, so they easily could be 3-1 coming into this game, but they just, poor clock management as well as some penalties, that was the undoing of the Orange a week ago. But defensively, they're tough, and offensively, they're getting some production, and I like what Syracuse brings in the middle of the field with Kennedy at the long stick midfield position. I also love what Hopkins brings with Kuhn. So this is going to be a fun game. Last year, Hopkins wiped out the Orange 18-7 in the Dome, if I remember correctly. And Hopkins has now won 8 or 9 straight in the month of March, including that win against Syracuse a year ago. So March has been very kind to Johns Hopkins. We'll see if they can keep the streak going this weekend.
On to our next featured game, number 8, Denver. They're 4-1 now. They'll take on number 10, Notre Dame, Saturday at 10 o'clock Eastern in the Pacific Coast Shootout.
That's 10 p.m., not 10 a.m.
Yeah.
Like the Denver game last weekend. How about that?
Oh, that's
that was a youth league special.
Yeah, I know.
Last weekend at the newly renovated Carolina lacrosse facility.
It's really nice.
10 a.m. Wow.
That's 8 a.m. Mountain Time.
Yeah, I was thinking, who brought the orange slices?
This is a
for halftime.
7 o'clock Pacific.
And were there snowballs after the game?
And 10 Eastern, 10 p.m. Eastern time. Two really good teams that have a nice little rivalry.
You mentioned the rivalry, and I agree with you. What if I told you Denver has won 7 of the last 8 in this series? What would you say?
I'm going to be surprised.
And that is what has happened. That is what has happened. The lone victory for Notre Dame during that stretch was last year in the regular season when they beat Denver 11-9. Pioneers got the rematch first round of the NCAA tournament at Notre Dame and were able to turn the tables and win 9-7. Last neutral site game between these two teams was the 2017 NCAA tournament at Hofstra, where Denver ran away with it 16-4. So it'll be interesting to see what happens this time around. Denver has Austin French back, first game against Carolina a week ago, goal and 5 assists. He looks good. Ellis Geis has played really good lacrosse. I thought Alex Reddy was a difference in that Carolina game, much like he didn't perform well in the Duke game last weekend. He was good with 11 saves, and Carolina didn't get great goaltending, and he was a difference in that victory. Notre Dame, big win against University of Maryland at Loftus a week ago. Love their scoring balance. Gleason, Costa Beal, all
Willits, Morin,
all with 10. I think their score sheet, I'd have to look, but it goes like 10 points, 9 points, 9 points, 9 points.
Correct.
Very balanced, and that makes them tough to defend. And I like the way they're playing under the new shot clock rules. I like their tempo. I like their pace. So this should be a very entertaining game.
Well, I had a chance to talk to their leading scorer, Brendan Gleason, and we talked about them playing under the new shot clock rules and their balanced scoring. And here's that conversation with Brendan.
We're joined by Notre Dame's senior attackman, Brendan Gleason. Brendan, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
So the Irish bounced back from the loss of Richmond to beat Maryland in overtime, 14-13 last Sunday. What was the key to the win for your team?
You know, I think just overall we had a really good week of practice after that Richmond loss. You know, it was definitely a tough one down in Richmond. We came back on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and just were really focused in and knew what we had to get done because, you know, we knew we had Maryland coming to town. And so we were just really focused. And then I think during the game, we just, you know, we played hard for the whole 60 minutes or 62 minutes, whatever it was with overtime. And, you know, we were just really just focused in and made the smart plays for pretty much the whole game and, you know, ended up getting the win.
Notre Dame's known for its stingy defense, and I was one of the people that was surprised by the offensive explosion in this game. How have the new rules, especially shot clock, changed the way your team plays, if at all?
I guess the shot clock really, I feel like, hasn't changed a whole lot for us on the offensive end. You know, we know we've got the strong defense, and so that definitely helps us on that end of the field with our defense, you know, only having to play those guys for 80 seconds rather than mm-hmm. some of the 2-minute possessions we had seen in the past. But on offense, you know, really just one thing we wanted to focus on was using the whole shot clock. So, you know, even though it is only 80 seconds, you know, that's a lot of time to play offense if you use it right. And I think honestly, one of the biggest things that the shot clock has helped us with is in the riding game, because, you know, it changed from the 30 seconds to clear to the 20 seconds to clear. And with the way our team rides, I think that's been a huge benefit for us.
What would you say is the biggest difference between last year's team and this team in 2019?
You know, it's still early, so kind of hard to tell, but sure. I think we've got a lot of young guys who, you know, were freshmen last year and maybe weren't getting a ton of playing time, but guys that are coming into themselves and playing a bigger role this year as sophomores. You see guys like Wheaton Jacoboys, Ryan Hallenbach, Mikey Dre, Connor Moore, and those guys are really stepping up and playing bigger roles for us. Mo Meyer had a good goal last weekend. So, you know, all these guys are really embracing a little bit of a bigger role this year. And I think, you know, that's led to some offensive success for us.
You guys returned three close defenders that started last year, plus your starting goalie from a year ago. What do fans need to know about the Irish defense?
You know, it's kind of more of the same for us. We've got that continuity back there with those three guys and Schmidty in goal. And Coach Byrne, you know, coaching us up the same way he has for my 4 years here. And I just really think that's, you know, that's something we pride ourselves on. And those guys, and with our, you know, strong core of short stick D middies and our LSMs who have been playing really well, you know, it's definitely going to be something that we build our team around and something that's going to be a strong point for us for the whole year.
All right, this weekend you guys leave South Bend, Indiana, and head to Southern California for the Pacific Coast Shootout. Now, you also played in this event back in your freshman year. So besides hopefully another significant top 10 win, what other benefits can your team get out of a trip like this?
Yeah, well, I think maybe best of all, we get to get out of the, you know, 10 degree weather here in South Bend and go out to Southern California right. And see the sun. So that'll definitely be nice. You know, we finally get to play outside. You know, we've only played once outside, and that was down at Richmond. So other than that, we've been playing outside in Loftus. So, you know, just getting outside. And then that game just gives us a great opportunity to, you know, grow the game of lacrosse out west and down there. And, you know, when we were there my freshman year, it was a great atmosphere. You know, we play the game at night, so you get to play under the lights. Mm-hmm. And when we were there, the stadium was packed. So I think the fans out in Southern California definitely love seeing these big-time matchups coming out there. And so, you know, we're hoping for another big win and another great, you know, few days out in California.
Sure. So as you get ready to play number 8 Denver, what do you expect from the Pioneers based on what you've seen on film?
Yeah, so they're a great team, you know, as they have been the last, you know, 8 years pretty much. You know, they've got great stick skills on offense, and they move the ball really well. And, you know, they've got a great coaching staff, so they're going to come out strong. And I think mostly we've just got to match that early on in the game, which we did a great job of this past weekend against Maryland. And so, you know, getting out to that fast start and then continuing that throughout the course of the game is going to be something that's important for us. And I think just, you know, being methodical, kind of like we were on offense this past weekend, and and, you know, being kind of selective with our shots and our dodges, and, you know, getting to the spots where we want to dodge against these guys is going to be important. And, you know, taking shots, you know, not taking them in the first 15, 20 seconds of the shot clock, but kind of, you know, working against the defense and wearing them down and getting those great looks at the end of the shot clock.
Now, you grew up in Vermont. How would you describe the lacrosse scene in your home state?
You know, definitely one of the smaller states in the country. So especially population wise, you know, just given that lower population number, lacrosse hasn't been, you know, huge in Vermont. But definitely in my time growing up there, I've seen it grow a lot and improve a lot. When I was younger, my dad actually kind of started the whole youth lacrosse scene in northern Vermont. Uh-huh. And so just even in my time from, you know, third grade up through my senior year of high school, I saw it grow a significant amount. And then the whole like club lacrosse scene in Vermont as well has grown. They now have a program up there, 802 Lacrosse, mm-hmm. which started by Ren Garnett. And, you know, that's been a huge addition to the lacrosse scene in northern Vermont. I think they now have a team for pretty much every graduation year. And you just see a lot more younger guys, you know, wanting to pick up the stick and play lacrosse.
So it sounds like your dad was pretty influential in your development. Besides him, is there any player that you look up to or try to pattern your style or game after?
You know, I don't know if there's one specific guy, but definitely growing up and watching a lot of lacrosse and being a big fan, you know, I just kind of tried to take a little bit out of, you know, all those guys' game, I guess. You know, I watched Rob Pinnell a lot growing up. My dad went to Cornell, so I was always a big fan.
Okay.
You know, some of those guys like Jordan Wolf, who's, you know, a fast guy and uses speed. You know, I kind of like to just take a little bit of that and try to implement it into my game in ways that I see can help me out.
So in high school, you also played hockey and football, and I read you were a standout running back in football. So here's a question for you. Who's your all-time favorite Notre Dame football player?
Ooh, let's see. That's something. I'd have to go with Brady Quinn, quarterback for the Irish.
Okay, good choice.
They had a couple good teams.
Yeah.
You know, when I was back then in middle school, so I was a big fan back then, and he was a stud for them.
Yeah. All right, last question. Did you see the rollout on social media earlier this week of the PLL rosters?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. All right. Who's your favorite team and why?
The Redwoods for sure.
And what about
big
it?
Big Notre Dame
sure.
contingent there. You know, so all these guys that I've played with in my past 4 years, and you know, I'm excited to see them ball out this year and have a good year in the new league.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun this summer. All right, Brennan, I really appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us, and good luck this Saturday and throughout the season.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
What a nice kid. Yeah, really interesting
good guy.
To talk to. Really good guy.
You're doing a good job with the interviews, by the way.
Oh, thank you.
My schedule has not lined up to be.
Yeah, you're supposed to be doing at least half of these.
I'm
not
sorry.
All of them.
It's not because I don't want to. It's because I can't.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And I'm trying to give you a compliment by saying
you're doing a
good job.
Thanks.
And you're doing a good job
I'm
producing
putting D-Fly
this.
And the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
You are. There's a lot more work than being in the midweek podcast.
Yeah.
Now I know why Terry.
The interviews.
Now I know why Foy gave us this podcast.
Because we could.
He's no dummy.
Yeah.
So you could do all
passing
the
off
work.
A lot of work. Yeah.
Yeah.
I enjoy it. It's fun. It is, but it is very time consuming.
You don't have anything better to do. You sit around and do the podcast. Come on.
I think that a lot of people would like me doing my director of business development and events role.
You have a whole team.
Possible.
You have a team.
We do, and they're doing a great job. Dicks, you're getting a little excited.
I know.
You keep pulling out
your
headphones.
Cord. Yeah.
Jeez, this is the second or third time you've done that today. Calm down over there.
Getting riled up.
All right.
It's been a great season so far. I'm excited for this weekend.
Let's get to our marquee game of the week. Number one Towson versus number two Cornell, Sunday at 1 o'clock, also in that Crown Lacrosse Classic. Now, I thought a couple of weeks ago we might see this when Penn State played at Yale.
Mm-hmm.
But Yale got knocked off the weekend before.
Right.
And,
and
I thought that was a potential 1-2, but now we're going to get it. We're going to get a 1-2 with different teams.
Well, okay, if Towson and or Cornell loses on Friday, do we still have one versus two?
Yes.
I guess
the rankings go until they're posted on Monday.
I guess technically, but a little bit of the bloom will be off the rose if one or if both these teams lose. But no, this is going to be a good game. When I was doing research for this game, man, how about Towson? Just unranked.
I love their team.
Right? I think they were unranked to begin the season.
Yeah, we it was a conversation we had on like our editorial Slack channel this week. We're trying to remember a time when an unranked team became the number one team during the regular season or rose so fast, and we couldn't think of one. Now, Loyola won the national championship. I think they were ranked 21 in our face-off yearbook preseason poll that particular year. But I can't remember a team outside of the top 20 becoming a number one team.
What about
in such a short time?
What about 2 years ago when Rutgers took the number one ranking?
I think
they
started in the top 20.
And then Penn State was also at one point number one that season too. Those were the two teams that I thought about when Towson ascended. And it's funny. I've been having conversations this week or texts, and people are like, "Towson's really number one," and they say it like they just stepped in something that really smells. And I'm like, Towson's good. They're a good team, but I understand where they're coming from. And this is the first time that they've ever been ranked number one in the history of their lacrosse program, which is interesting to me.
Yeah, it is.
You think about some of the great players that have come through that program and the great teams that they've had. Obviously, their three best teams in the history would be the 1991 NCAA finalists, 2001, 2017 semifinalists. Right, so Towson's
their Division I era.
Division
now, there's
one
some old timers like
Jim Darkangelo, Bob Grebe.
Yeah, who would say that
they won the Division II national championship back in those days? But on the Division I level, you're right. Yeah, they've had three teams advance to championship weekend. This team is for real. They're really good, and I love how the Towson community has seemed to embrace. I'll mention it in my written piece this week, but there was an ad in the Baltimore Sun saying, yes, or guess who's number one in lacrosse? And it says Towson. And it goes, yes, that's right, the Towson Tigers. Come watch number one play. And it has their next three home games, which I believe, like, the road doesn't get any easier for Towson. They play Jacksonville and Cornell this weekend. Then they have Duke. They go to Duke. And then they host Denver over the next couple of weeks. So Towson, if people aren't believers now with their wins over Hopkins, Georgetown, and Mount St. Mary's, and Loyola, this four game stretch is really interesting for the Tigers.
Yeah, you're right. They'll play Cornell. Duke,
I know
and Denver.
Right. Yeah. Did you doubt me? Did you have to look that
up?
No,
I just like to look it up. I like searching insidelacrosse.com. It's a great website. I highly recommend it.
Because now you don't get
listeners.
To surf it as often as you used to because you're putting this thing together.
Yeah.
You know, it's consuming your life. But
they're really having a lot of fun with it.
They are. And I think it's neat. I think it's neat when teams, schools, programs embrace the success versus, and I understand, you know, you try to play it off. Look, it's the second week of March. Okay, we're number one. Great. But we haven't won anything yet. We haven't proven anything yet. But I think it's cool when people embrace the success of the non-traditional teams that you would see ranked number one in college lacrosse.
All right, Dix, it's time for our favorite segment, the give and go.
Oh, I thought it was a sign off. Okay, go ahead.
Well, first I do want to talk about my sister has a gift for you.
Oh, yeah?
It's an eggplant parmesan.
Really?
Yes.
Oh.
My sister Tracy Gianfracaro. And man, could she cook. So I saw her last weekend. She had asked me before. She's like, hey, are you going to this thing? We had a family event that she wasn't sure I was going to make it to. And I was like, yeah, I'll be there. And she's like, okay, I'm going to make something for Dixie.
She's so nice. That's really, really nice of her.
So she made it, and you're going to love it. It's a really, I had to have some.
Okay.
It's really good.
Are you allowed to tell me what it is? Or
it's eggplant parmesan.
Eggplant parm. Okay.
Yeah, you're going to love it.
My wife is allergic to eggplant.
Well, then it's just more for
you.
So
that means it's me and the boys.
Yeah.
Are gonna,
the boys will devour it. Don't tell them what it is. They might not eat eggplant either.
That is true.
It's a saucy Italian dish.
Yeah. And it's got sauce and cheese.
Yes.
How bad can it be?
I had some. It's good. So next week, we'll talk about it a little bit more.
Yes, I'll give the review. Tell Tracy I said thank you. Well, I guess I can tell her. Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate it.
And now it's time for the give and go.
Okay.
All right, here's the question.
Three best places you've ever eaten eggplant parm. Is that the topic?
See, my car, the walk to work, and then in the kitchen at work.
Okay.
No, this is... I know you watch a lot of lacrosse.
Yeah.
And when I'm not watching college basketball, cable news, or lacrosse, I like to go on Netflix and see what's there. So I don't only watch Netflix, but I also watch Amazon Prime. And I don't do Hulu.
Okay.
But Amazon Prime, they have like their own original shows. There's one in particular, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Have you heard of this show?
No.
It's great. Completed its second season. It's about a woman, a Jewish woman, in the late 1950s living in New York City who becomes a stand-up comedian. Hmm. And she, like Lenny Bruce, is one of her friends. And it's a period piece. And, you know, she has great costumes and clothes. And it's really, really funny.
Neat.
And my wife and I, we watched, you know, binge watched the first two seasons of that over the course of like a month and really, really enjoyed it. But Netflix wise, all right, you got your list. I'll go to the last three things I've watched on Netflix that I like.
Okay.
Have you seen this Fire Festival document?
Yes, I watched that. Yeah, I did watch that.
So that was my first thing. Pretty good. It's just a crazy story.
Yeah.
And I know that there's also a rival one. I think that might be on Hulu or Amazon Prime, but I watched the one on Netflix.
That turned out to be a major scam. The whole thing was a major con.
Scam. Yeah. It's basically this guy promises to have the greatest concert of all time, music festival. It's going to be on an island, a private island somewhere in the Caribbean, and that's not what happens.
Right.
And I suggest you go watch it because it's just a wild story. The second thing is a show called Bodyguard.
Kevin Costner, Whitney Houston?
No. I thought it could be something like it's a British show. It stars the guy, I don't even know his real name, but he was Robb Stark on Game of Thrones.
I don't watch
Game of Thrones. He's a very good actor. He won Golden Globe for like best actor, that's when I first saw
it. You lost me at Golden Globe.
It's the Oscar for
I know
the
what
Emmy
it is,
or
but
something.
The fact that you know that he won a Golden Globe.
Well, that's how I learned of this series. It's only six parts, so it's about 6 hours long. And he's a Secret Service agent or bodyguard for the UK Home Secretary.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the UK Home Secretary is like the equivalent of being both the Attorney General in the United States, overseeing like Department of Justice and probably the Department of Homeland Security. So it's a really important role in British government. And he's the bodyguard for her. And a whole plot of stuff happens with some terrorists. And it's wild. It's a really good, well-acted, well-shot, action-packed drama that I highly recommend. And then the other thing is a show called Sugar Rush I've been watching with my daughter. It's a baking show where people have to bake against the clock. So first you make cupcakes, then you make a confection.
Isn't that Junior Chef, Cupcake Wars?
This just happens to be the show. And my daughter, who's 5 and a half, thinks this is the best show. We watched every episode. She even asked to watch episodes again. She's like, can I see the one with Vivian again? I'm like, okay. And it was a good show for the family.
Sugar Rush.
Yeah, don't watch. I wouldn't recommend The Fire Festival, Bodyguard, or The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel for the kids. But a good family show would be Sugar Rush.
Didn't you say Marvelous Mrs. Maisel's Amazon Prime?
Yeah, it is.
So it's not Netflix.
It's not on
Netflix. But we're doing Netflix.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
All right. Well, give me your list. You obviously haven't seen any of these, and now you have three recommendations.
Yeah, I haven't watched any of those.
There's so much content.
The shows that I will sit down and watch if I am home, there's two, 8 and 8:30, Wednesday nights on ABC, The Goldbergs and Schooled.
I don't know Schooled.
Schooled is the spinoff of The Goldbergs, where a character from The Goldbergs goes back to the high school and is a teacher. It's pretty cool.
Is it modern day?
No, it's so The Goldbergs is based in the
80s. Yeah, of course.
Schooled is based in the 90s. So
which character?
Lainey.
Okay.
Big Tasty's Big Tasty Barry's
Barry Big Tasty
girlfriend.
Goldberg.
Yeah, yeah.
That is a great show. I do watch The Goldbergs.
The Goldbergs is awesome.
There's three shows that I tape: Modern Family, The Goldbergs, and Blackish.
And I like, so Blackish I dropped out of a while ago. I thought it was decent in the beginning, but then I just lost interest. Modern Family is still, like, I'll watch it if I'm there, but I don't like make a point to watch Modern Family. I guess it's been on too long, you know, too much success, I guess. Still a really good show and really funny. But yeah, Goldbergs and Schooled last night, or no, actually it was a week ago episode, but I missed it because I was out of town. But I watched it on demand. Was two kids were doing a talent contest or something. It was Crisscross doing jump. And So it's just like the
was
music.
Was that even in the 80s?
That was 90s. No, remember, Schooled.
Gotcha.
Schooled is the 90s. Goldberg's is the 80s. And the music is, you know, they do different types of school. Oh, there you go. You pulled up the Bodyguard. 56% match. So that's like not really highly recommended for your viewing pleasure. But that's probably because you watch.
Well, I'm a weighted
you
down
watch
by
Sugar Rush.
No, I'm weighted down. My kids are also on my account.
Yeah,
so there's
a lot of
Sophia the First and
gotcha.
Ninjago and a bunch of other crap.
My kids watch Flash. They watch The Flash, I think, on Netflix.
Oh yeah, that's like a CW show that's probably on Netflix.
Yeah, now. And I think they watch a show called Good Girls. I don't know. I think there's a show called Good Girls. It's pretty supposed to be. I don't know what it is. I probably just.
There's so much stuff out there. It's just a great time, though.
Latest thing I watched on Netflix, Narcos Mexico. Really good.
So I watched the first season of Narcos and loved it, but I didn't watch the second season. And you're saying this is like a prequel to it?
So I've never watched Narcos myself, but I was talking to a friend of mine a few months ago, and he was talking about Narcos. And then he said, I've been watching Narcos Mexico. And I'm like, oh, you know, that's one of those shows I'd like to watch. And he goes, well, you can watch Narcos Mexico. He's like, actually, watching Narcos Mexico first would be better because it's the prequel. So basically, it's the beginning of the
Narcos story.
Yeah, the Narcos story, but it starts with marijuana coming from Mexico. So it was really, really good. Subtitled for the most part because the characters speak in Spanish. So
I like that.
You have to pay attention. It forces you to pay attention. Now, there is English speaking. It's the birth of the Narcos marijuana trade originating in Mexico and then going into the United States and other areas. And it's also the birth of the DEA. Hmm. So it's pretty cool watching the maturation, the beginnings and then the maturation of, and then just the, you know, the corruption that existed and still may exist in Mexico to where the people who are supposed to be fighting this are profiting from it. So that was a really good series. I love the they have those I think they were done by CNN, but the decade documentaries. So I just got done watching the 80s, which was great. That talks about the different segments. Obviously they talk about the movies, television shows, music that was popular back in that decade, but it also goes into the evolution of the personal computer. Yeah. Apple and Microsoft being born during those times and evolving during those times. The savings and loan crisis from back in the 80s. I don't know if you recall that or not, but ours was Old Court Savings and Loan up on Randallstown and Liberty Road.
I had no savings. And
neither did I.
And no loans.
I just remember the name Jeffrey Levitt and how prominent he was in the news. I think there was also, I don't know if it was a standalone or if it was part of a genre, but the televangelists came into vogue back in the 80s. Jim Baker, Jimmy Swaggart, Jerry Falwell, I think, was back then. So that was,
I remember a lot of that. Faye Baker.
Tammy Faye Baker was married to Jim Baker. Yeah, and they all were befouled by scandal, doing things they shouldn't have been doing.
Hey, Dix, you watch a lot of these 80s and 90s documentaries. Any 90210 part of it?
Tough week.
R.I.P. Dylan McKay.
I haven't watched the 90s one all the way through, but I'm sure it's in there. I'm surprised you're in one piece today.
Why is that?
Because you're a big 90210 guy.
No, I was not. You like Steve Sanders? Was your guy?
Keg House?
Kappa, Epsilon, Gamma?
No, it was like Keg House. Didn't they just call it Keg House?
No, it was Kappa, Epsilon, Lon, Gamma.
Oh, was that what it was? Is that even real?
No, that's why it was so funny. It was that it was like the Keg fraternity was the letters.
Yeah.
We're talking about the untimely death of Luke Perry.
Yeah.
Actor, famous for 90210, but nowadays he's on
Riverdale. I've never watched Riverdale.
Yeah,
that's a Netflix show, right?
No, it's another CW show. Might be. Maybe all the CW shows go onto Netflix.
Okay.
That's where you see them.
Yeah.
RIP Dylan McKay.
I never watched 90210 until my junior year of college. Casey Gordo introduced me to 902 Dumb Show.
That dude was good.
He's a good player. Yeah. Yeah, good player. And he loved 90210.
He could have been on that show.
Yeah, it is true. That is true.
He looks the part. He could have fit right in there.
That was they just recently announced a reboot of that, didn't they?
Yeah, that's the craziest part, is that they're getting ready to film it. But you know what? The show is not like their characters, what they're doing now. It was going to be more like the Seinfeld on the Larry David Curb Your Enthusiasm show, where it was the actual actors playing themselves, like Ian Ziering as Ian Ziering. And the show is going to be, the movie is going to be about them doing a reunion show, which I wish they would just, what those guys are doing in their 40s or 50s as their characters. You know,
Ian Ziering.
Brandon Walsh is like, whatever, Ian Ziering runs.
Sharknado. Ian Ziering is like, has made like 10 Sharknados, right?
Yes, he was one of the actors in there. But my point
was,
is,
was one,
like,
of the actors? He's the main guy.
Well, Tara Reid. And that other guy,
Al Roker,
that other person. Yeah, I don't remember that.
David Hasselhoff.
I remember like seeing on Twitter Sharknado, and for whatever reason it was a hashtag. It was Sharknado, hashtag Sharknado. And I just remember seeing it and reading it wrong and thinking it was Sharknado.
Are you serious?
What's a Sharknado? Nobody knows what that is. So
they do now.
I was looking at it and I was like, Sharknado, like, what's everybody on Twitter talking about Sharknado? Like, what is this thing? Because I never heard of the movie, didn't know it existed, and there's no such thing as a Sharknado. It's not like an actual weather event. So I was like, what is a Sharknado?
So you're like the guy from Christmas Story, Fragile. It's Italian.
Yeah. Or when Gary Delabate said McKine for machine. Oh, the Ohio McKine. That's my favorite lacrosse team.
I was flipping through Twitter. And there was a Baba Booey makeover from like 15 years ago. And he walks in, and all you hear is Jackie. And everybody's like, oh! Baba Bohai had his hair straightened. He had like this yellow suit on. It was called his Hamptons outfit.
Oh, geez.
Howard's laughing at him. And he's just unmerciful with the, they couldn't do anything about your teeth. And of course they did a close up of his mouth, and he can't get his lips over his teeth.
Probably licking his lips.
Fa fa fooey. Oh yeah. My goodness. That was funny. Not, and Luke Perry, not the only notable passing. RIP King Kong Bundy.
Yeah. One of your childhood legends.
He was, I remember him from back in the day, wrestling Hulk Hogan, and Bundy's shtick was, I mean, obviously he was a big guy, but he always wanted a referee to count to five. He didn't want the three count. He wanted the five count.
Why?
Because he's just to show his dominance over his opponent.
Oh, I get it.
That was like the era of the big men back then. You had King Kong Bundy, Big John Studd.
Andre the Giant.
Andre the Giant was the Mac Daddy of them all. Killer Khan. Remember Killer Khan? Kamala was bad. The Ugandan Giant Kamala, who just so happened to be from, like, Brooklyn, New York. And that was before Yokozuna. Yokozuna came a few years later. No, actually, Yokozuna was in the 90s. What are you just shaking your head and laughing?
I never watched wrestling. I mean, I was aware of it. My friends watched it.
You knew who King Kong Bundy was.
Yeah, I did.
He was a guy who, much like Georgie Animal Steel, was actually a pretty intelligent guy, and I think he did commercials. Like, I think he did computer commercials. At the height of his success, or shortly thereafter, King Kong Bundy, like for the Commodore 64 or something like that. But yeah, RIP King Kong Bundy. And then the lead singer Prodigy committed suicide.
Are you sure it was suicide?
That's what somebody said on the radio.
I just heard that he passed.
Oh, really? Yeah, I think it's alleged that he committed suicide. So, tough week.
Yeah.
For celebrities. I'm trying to think of a third one that I've watched. Watch Ozark.
Ozark's great.
Season 2 of Ozark. My only complaint with Ozark is it's shot so dark. It's just very, very dark with the way it's shot. But Ozark was one that I've watched recently. I also watched this god-awful one, Insatiable. It's about a girl who is heavyset and gets punched in the jaw by a homeless man and has her mouth wired shut for months, and then loses a ton of weight, and then becomes really good looking and enters beauty pageants.
All right. I haven't watched it,
it's
but
quirky.
I've seen the, you know, like the, you know, preview of it.
It's terrible.
It pops up as a thing.
It's like terrible, but it's one of those things that it's so terrible that it's good and you watch it. Alyssa Milano's in it, but that was like I'll watch it when I can kind of thing. Whereas Ozark, you know, you watch Narcos Mexico, like that was a binge watch. Ozark, binge watch. '80s binge watch, that kind of stuff.
I got a question for you. Do you watch all these with Erica, or are there some shows that you watch by yourself?
With Ozark, my wife actually watched the first season with Erica, and then the second season after the first episode, she's like, "You know what?
Same thing happened to me.
I'm not into this." And I was like, "Okay, sleep on it. Let me know if you change your mind in the morning, because if you're not all in, that means green light for me to watch it."
Thank you. This is exactly the way I feel. This is what happens in my house too. So with Ozark, same. We watched the whole first season together, loved it. Started to watch the second one, and then she fell asleep, and then you got to rewind. And then I'm like, I've watched the first episode and a half 4 times.
Mm.
Can you, at some point, I'm going to move ahead without you?
Well, Erica made it clear. She was like, I'm not into it. Like, and then the next day I was like, "What's up?" And she's like, "Go ahead." And I watched it on my own. Narcos Mexico, I asked her if she wanted to watch it with me, and she's like, "No, I'm, you know, whatever." And then I watched it. After you watch that first episode, it's either are you in or you out.
Yeah.
And if you're
no
out,
going back.
And you know, my travels last week to Dallas, but both flying out and then flying home, I watched, you know, a good portion of the Narcos Mexico episodes. So yeah, summer, I was watching Insatiable on my own just because I was so ashamed, and I would have it on, and my wife would, and she actually was like, "This is actually," said the same thing I did. "It's so bad, it's good. Like, it's funny, it's quirky, and it's cringy."
I'll watch the first episode.
It's cringy. Like it's definitely cringeworthy, and the story just takes twists and turns, and you're like, "What? This is so stupid." But you know, anyway.
All right. Well, if you like what you heard, please do us a favor and click on the subscribe button. Leave a rating and share it with a friend. Please pass it on. You can hit us up on Twitter at Dixon Lacrosse or at D_Fly, F-L-Y, or via email at dflynn@insidelacrosse.com. Also, don't forget to check out our other podcasts. We drop a new one every weekday during the season. Have a great week and enjoy the games.
That was kind of a weird one.